As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, a podcast about a life following Watford Football Club. That's the Premier League Watford Football Club, brought to you by The Athletic. My name is John. With me is Adam Leventhal.
Hello.
Who has been at the Brentford Community Stadium today, and Mike.
Hello, John. Hello, Adam. Hello, everybody.
It was 2-0 defeat at Brentford, but pre-season, you know, isn't about results all the time. It's off. Oh, no, wait. It was actually a game in the Championship, but it felt like a pre-season game. Adam, you were there. What was the energy like? What was the feeling like? Both the whole stadium with Brentford and where they are, because they're in the playoffs and Watford are promoted. What was it like in the ground today?
It was my first visit and I was very, very impressed. Just a little bit of background. Obviously, working at Sky Sports for years and years and years, I've seen this ground being built over the years and driven past it so many times when I was going into Sky Studios and all that sort of stuff. But it's the first time I'd ever set foot inside. And it's really, really, really nice. It's not too big. It's just the right size. You're really close to the action. I like the sort of the mottled colour effect on the seats and things like that. And it's just all very neat and tidy. And for their sake, I hope they get up into the Premier League, because I think for a lot of away fans, it's going to be a really nice away day, you know, by the Thames. I've just pulled up because I had to leave the car park at the stadium, you know, right by the Thames, right by Kew Bridge. There's some decent pubs around. And I, you know, previously Griffin Park was famous because it had four pubs on each corner, or one pub on each corner. That might have been overkill with four. But yeah, no, it's just they've done it really well. It's a well-run club. And I really like Thomas Frank as well. I know he's sort of, he might not, a bit Marmite for fans and things like that. He's sort of quite self-confident, but I think they've got a good club, well run, with an interesting philosophy and a good pathway through to the first team. So all in all, first experience of going to the stadium was really good, bar the result, really.
Yeah, but interesting you say that pathway and that sort of philosophy that they have. I think that's what everyone sort of talks about. And they are, I think, at that stage where you need to go up, lads, and see what you can do. Even if they only got for 1 year, it's part of their sort of, can they become anything more than what Brentford have been? But Mike, the game itself, it didn't mean anything technically. And there were a lot of changes. I know you were disappointed about one thing in particular, weren't you?
First and foremost, Norwich have tied up the title today, so congratulations to them. It wouldn't have mattered if we'd have won in the end, that Norwich got their victory, so that meant that the title was always going to end up at Carrow Road. So that was a long shot. But the one thing we did have to play for was the best defensive record in the Championship, which I think is 30. No one's conceded fewer than 30 goals in a Championship season. I believe that was Middlesbrough. We've done 28 up until today. And we've let that well, it's a bit, being a bit picky, isn't it? But a little bit. Today. So we've drawn with that. So yeah, I was quite keen. I just thought it would be a nice little, if we couldn't get the title, it would be a nice little flourish to the season, a nice little footnote to the season, and a worthy sort of achievement from the for the defenders, because that's really what this season has been built on, hasn't it? Some superb defensive work. So a shame to see that go, but that's being a bit picky, really.
A lot picky, I think, Michael. But it was an opportunity, I suppose, Adam, for many players to shine a little bit, either because they haven't been playing in the first team, or even young players who are sort of making their mark, particularly Joseph Hungbo. And it was so annoying and so sad for him, having shown us a lot this season, wanting to see a whole 90 minutes for him, and he lasted 20.
Yeah, it was really, really disappointing. And Chisco Munoz said after the game that sometimes these things happen, that you wait for your opportunity and you're full of power and full of energy. And because you haven't been playing and you haven't had that sort of consistency, these things can happen, unfortunately, that you can pick up a hamstring injury. It looked like a hamstring injury when he went off. It's just cruel. But I suppose, the subplot to the game was that we got a showcase into all the players that could potentially play on the right-hand side. And I think we had, so we had Hungo to start off with. Then Zinkernagel came on for 5 minutes. Then Success came on to replace Cleverly. That pulled Zinkernagel back into midfield. And then Success had a go on the right-hand side. And then who else had a go? I think someone else had a go on the... Oh, yeah, Pochettino towards the end of the game. So it's like, yeah, come on, have a go. And I don't think anyone really covered themselves in glory. And I suppose you sort of get an insight there into how influential Ismaïl Assar is and just how consistent he's been, that we haven't really had to even worry about first change and, or we need to take him off after 70 minutes to save him for a midweek game against Rotherham. They've just been pushing him out, week in or day in, day out almost in the Championship.
I felt that actually what this game really showed me was that we were able and we were lucky in many ways to keep such a strong starting 11 for this whole season. It was almost like this could have been if things had gone badly with injuries, particularly Ismaïl Assar, if he had left maybe in January. It just sort of shows where, maybe we're not the weaknesses but the limitations of our squad, and there are things to be done in the summer before the real pre-season starts. Mike, there's one player in particular who came on, and as Adam's already said, he got about 5 minutes in his preferred position. PZ7, if I was young and hit, that's what I'd call him, but Philip Zinkernagel. Do you feel like promotion has come a little bit too soon for him? And maybe, do you think he's got what... are we going to see him playing next year, do you think?
I don't think it's come too soon. He's part of this squad. He was bought with a view to him playing a key role in the squad, clearly. And I think his first game was Manchester United, wasn't it, in the FA Cup? And, against Premier League opposition, albeit not Man United's first team, but, recognisable side. And I think the pace in which that game was played suited Philip Zinkernagel. And I think the sort of slightly less rumbustious nature of the Premier League might actually suit him a little bit. He might have a little bit more time on the ball. You have to be obviously more precise. You don't get second chances in the Premier League. If you make mistakes, you're going to be punished. The chances that you get offensively, you need to take them. So that's something that we'll have to keep an eye on. But I think in terms of the whole pace of it, I think it actually might suit him. I think it was pretty clear he found it relatively difficult to adjust to the rough and tumble of the Championship, didn't he? And understandably so, in fairness. I mean, it is ludicrous. You watch some of the fouls that don't get given in the Championship, and you think about, God, if that had been in the Premier League, it wouldn't only be a foul, it'd probably be a yellow card or even a red card. So it's all a million miles an hour, Hasten Jason. And I think it was a bit of a shock to the system. So I'm actually fascinated to see how he does in the Premier League. And I've actually got high hopes for him. He's obviously talented. He's obviously skillful, quick feet, can pick a pass, good assist rate. And I reckon he's got a decent shot on him as well. So I actually think he could be one to watch in the Premier League. I've got high hopes for him.
Adam, the high hopes, no hopes. Isaac Success and Andre Gray, this was an opportunity for them. Do you think it was the game? Do you think it was the fact that the rest of the team weren't sort of behind them to do what they need to do? I know this is such a negative thing to sort of talk about at this point, but nothing sort of shone through to make me really guarantee, I think, that they're going to be around next year, if not, or not desire to be around next year.
Well, let's deal with them separately. I think Andre Gray playing centrally, I don't know. There's just not enough really from him, unfortunately. And I don't think the service was particularly good to him. And I think he was getting very frustrated about some of the balls that were being sort of pinged over the top. But there was enough there, and he had a couple of opportunities on the ball to maybe pick a better pass. And then in the second half, when he did get that chance, and if you are a central striker and it's not going your way, you've got to take your opportunity when it comes. And it was actually Cafu from the right-hand side, Craig Cathcart, that swung it in. And that was his chance. He got the right side. He needed to control it, and he couldn't control it, and he couldn't finish. If that had been another striker, they may well have done it. And that's the difference. You know, he needed that to build his confidence, but it was a confidence draining performance from Andre Gray, unfortunately for him. Because then and I'll deal with Isaac's success in a minute, but you had Stipe Perica come on and made a surging run into the right-hand channel. And I know he didn't get the chip right, and it was easy for Raya to save. But it was just that instinct that he ran onto the ball, knew what he wanted to do, and then he had an opportunity. And I'm not saying that Stipe Perica is the answer, but I thought that in that 5 minutes, I saw more of an accomplished striker than I had done in the 85 minutes before with Andre Gray. And look, you know, he has had moments this season. He scored a good goal, if memory serves, against Birmingham when he ran onto the ball and just sort of was very sort of tunnel vision and banged it home. Scored against Wickham as well. But it's just not enough to be considered to be number one or even number two, I don't think, anymore. And then Isaac's success has obviously been given a fair few opportunities recently. And there were moments today. There's something there. But I just think they can't hope for that something to sort of be knitted together in consistent performances and retain him and keep that faith into the Premier League, even though I think that he could be a player. There's something, the way he's got a good touch at times, he's got strength, he can keep the ball, he can hold the ball up with, he goes down too quickly. There's a few things. If you could just get them out of his game and take out the sort of going down too easily, channel that into really pressing hard all the way through a challenge or all the way through a press, and then he would be some player. But I'm just not sure, if they are presented with an opportunity to move him on so they can give someone else a chance or bring someone else in, then I think with both Andre Gray and Isaac's success, then they will take that opportunity. And I think it's just because they know that they're not going to pull up trees in the Premier League, and they want to try a different approach. So I think that's one of the most interesting things. And then when you sort of set that alongside the narrative of playing against a side in Brentford that have had one striker who scored 30 goals, and Ivan Toney just looks dangerous. He links up well. His assist rate is scary, as well as his 30 goals. And you just sort of compare those levels. That is a Premier League striker in the waiting. Watford haven't got any Premier League strikers, and they're going to be in the Premier League. So that's the big thing, isn't it?
I think with Isaac's success, I think there's an element of him being slightly unlucky. He's never had a prolonged run in the side, has he? Whether it be injury or other people being in form, he just hasn't had that chance to iron out any kinks or issues that he's got. And therefore, I think when he has come in, he feels things a little bit more keenly. I think the way he goes down is embarrassing, really. And I think it speaks to his attitude on a wider context, really. I think if you come in and want to prove yourself, it's not about winning cheap free kicks, is it? It's about scoring goals. And quite frankly, he's never really looked like doing it. And I agree with Adam. They obviously think there is something in there because they've kept him around. He got a contract extension and he's been given chances ahead of other people. You mentioned Stipe Perica. Ad, who hasn't had a look in until this afternoon, you have to think that he'd probably be looking elsewhere as well in the summer. But I think the time really now has come with Isaac's success. They've tried. And ultimately he has failed, haven't they? What is it, 61, 62, 63 performances for Watford, 2 goals in that time, and just looks increasingly disinterested and unlikely to make any sort of impact. And like Adam rightly says, this is in the Championship, a dead rubber in effect today, and he's sort of throwing himself around instead of really trying to force the issue. I think his performance against Luton was an absolute disgrace. And I think he's, whilst it's unfortunate, you can't deny he must have talent. They paid a lot of money for him, gave him that contract extension, gave him opportunities. He's absolutely failed to take them. And I think, you know, without wanting to be too harsh on anyone in particular, I think they just need to do whatever they need to do to get him out of the club. He'll be on decent wages, and that's probably a problem. But if they can ship him off to a championship side, I can't imagine anyone will want to pay any money for him. So that's whatever it is, £12 million, not well spent, plus the wages, but you live and you learn. And I think it's time for him to go. And yeah, Andre Gray, it just hasn't worked really, has it? I think the attitude, you know, there's been the well-publicised issues off the pitch. I think we've talked about them plenty, but we have talked about character, and he never goes missing on the pitch, Andre Gray. And I think we've heard enough to know that he is a decent and well-liked part of the squad. It just hasn't happened for him on the pitch. And I think, again, it's time that we just say, right, when it comes to the Premier League, we're going to be in a situation where we're going to get two or three decent or even half chances a game, and we need a striker who's going to stick one of them in if we're going to be in with a chance of staying in the division. Are either of those guys going to do it? You'd have to say, honestly, no. It's not as easy just moving them on. We've had this discussion before, and Adam's made the point. You can't just leave them by the side of the road. There are contracts and their careers, and they will obviously want to be looking after their futures, and as is their right. From Watford's point of view, the striker hunt, I think it needs to be stepped up, and what we saw today just brought that into pretty sharp contrast, didn't it?
Adam, was it just literally a dead rubber game for Watford, and the energy levels once that first goal went in, which was came out of nowhere after the break, and I'm still not quite sure 100% if that was a really decent penalty for them to get. Is it just the fact that this is the game after the promotion was a success, and we should just forget about it?
I think so. They're not going to worry too much about it. I didn't sort of see a team that was on the beach in the first half. I really didn't. I thought that I was quite impressed by, you know, the fact that they'd slotted back into a high level up against a good technical side. And I know that there was a little bit of a drop off from Brentford as well. I mean, they wanted to secure the win. They had something really to play for. I think, you know, we've spoken about it before, that the distance to get to Norwich was unrealistic. So there was always going to be a little bit of a drop off in levels. And when you change things around, so you've got Christian Cabasele rather than William Troost-Ekong, so you haven't got that connection with him and Sieralta. Craig Cathcart's been doing a decent job at right back. He was unfortunately, he got clipped. You probably obviously saw it. Everyone will have seen it. But, you know, he got clipped and then went down. And then thought, oh God, right at the beginning of the second half, and he was out of position. So there was that sort of overload on the left-hand side, Brentford left, and that led to the goal. So that was unfortunate. The penalty, I think, was just sort of a clumsy foot, wasn't it, in there, and yeah. Tony went down, and he was always going to slot it home. But I thought that the goal actually woke Watford up, and I thought that they played with actually a little bit more purpose and a little bit more, they were a little bit braver, and they were trying to make passes, and they were driving with their runs a little bit more. So I wasn't too worried about the performance overall in terms of the sort of the mentality and the what they were trying to do. It was just the people that were trying to do it weren't quite up to it today. I don't think it's not one to worry about.
Definitely.
But it just sort of gave us a little window, just a little bit of a window and a little bit of a reminder for, you know, Cristiano Giaretta, the sporting director, and for Gino Pozzo and for Scott Duxbury, just to maybe go, well, that was your chance. We'll take everything into consideration in the mitigation. But yeah, I think we've probably made our minds up a little bit more on a few players here and there. But overall, the players that played, I thought played well. So, you know, it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, I've been quite negative, certainly, but the game in itself, I think it turned on the Hungbo injury, didn't it? I think Watford looked really, really threatening down that side. He was incredibly bright and was asking huge questions of the Brentford defenders, and I thought we looked most likely, really, while he was on the pitch. And I think when he came off, and then Tom Cleverley in quick succession, and it just went, ah, this is just going to be one of those afternoons. And I think if we got the quick goal, it could have been a bit more of a fiesta, because sometimes when you get the promotion, the momentum just carries on, doesn't it? Even if you haven't been as focused perhaps as you ordinarily would have been. Obviously they would have had time off last week. It's not an ordinary preparation for a game, but sometimes you don't need it when you're high on success, basically. And I think perhaps if we had nicked that early goal, perhaps, you know, Hungbo should have had a penalty, but perhaps that Gosling had a great chance and perhaps should have done a little bit better. But I thought Hungbo should have had a penalty there. That goal goes in, and I think Watford might have had a much more enjoyable afternoon. So there's absolutely no concern from me in terms of the performance. We've done our work and we earned the right to not worry about that going our way. It wasn't all bad by any stretch of the imagination. We did hit the crossbar twice. On another day, we come away with something from it, absolutely. But this isn't a day really to worry too much about the result. This is, you know, already we've been spending the last week already looking forward to next season. And I think quite rightly so. As Adam says, the title was a very, very long shot. Wasn't to be. Even if we'd won 10-0 today, we weren't going to win the title. So not going to get too upset about the game at all. It's just focused on some areas that perhaps we know we're going to have to definitely make a change. But if any, I don't think any Watford supporter will lose too much sleep tonight, and I think that's absolutely right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Well, luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
A Watford FC podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is From the Rookery End.
We talked about it a few weeks ago. It's still rumbling all over the place and under there and over there. The possibility of a new Watford stadium. And a few weeks ago, after our chat, but not because of our chat, the mayor of Watford, Peter Taylor, sent out a couple of tweets about his thoughts and what he's doing. And I caught up with him just to find out about where him and Watford Council are about this possible move for Watford Football Club.
So I've been saying, you know, right since these plans were first mooted, that from my perspective as Mayor of Watford, I want to make sure that the club succeeds and work with them to make sure that they've got every opportunity to expand the ground at Vicarage Road. I just think there was a bit of, you know, not everybody was kind of aware of that, and also the fact that the council's been working really closely with the club. There's workshops. The other change, of course, is that the hospital plans are progressing, and the plans there are to build a new hospital effectively on where the car park is at the moment, and so that does free up some space and provide opportunities. So I just wanted to make people, you know, my view, I have said it over the last 12 months, but just to be really clear that I want to do everything I can so that the club has the option, the opportunity to stay on the current site and increase the capacity.
Because you've been the mayor for 3 years now?
That's right, yeah, just coming up to 3 years.
Yeah, and also you were deputy mayor before that. Has this sort of stuff come up before?
I have lots of conversations with the club about things like, you know, car parking and, you know, restrictions on roads, you know, and all those sorts of things. Even things like when they obviously got to the FA Cup final about having the screen in Castlebury Park. So there's lots of conversations about operational things. And I said, I remember when I ran for mayor actually in 2018, saying at the time that I wanted to work proactively with the club and look at, you know, opportunities to increase the capacity. I mean, they're really clear that they want to have a 30,000 seater capacity. It's about making sure that they're not a yo-yo club kind of going between the Premier League and the Championship, but established Premier League club. And to do that, for all of the financial reasons, everything else, they do need more capacity. So my response has been, well, let's see if we can make that happen at Vicarage Road. You know, I want to see Watford FC staying in Watford. And I know there are mixed views amongst the fans, but I think by and large, if people had a choice between what's been proposed in Bushey, being in Bushey and being at Vicarage Road, the preference for lots of fans would be, well, let's keep it at Vicarage Road. I do think it makes a difference having a club right in the centre of the town. You have that buzz in the town centre, you have people going to pubs and bars and all the rest of it. And I think that would change if you've got, you know, if the location moves to being close by junction 5 of the M1 and close to Bushing.
You know, what would do you think the impact would be? Because, you know, there's only a certain number of home games every year where fans are turning up. What would it impact, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, talking to the businesses in the town centre, you know, match days, there's a real buzz in the town centre. You know, I think that would be lost. There would still be some people that are going to the town centre, but far fewer. If you're coming, I don't know, say a lot of people arriving at Watford Junction Station, their route from Watford Junction Station to the ground would not go through Watford Town Centre. And so that, I think, would have a big impact. I mean, we've got all the figures. I think it's something like a 25% to 30% increase in the amount of people in the town centre on a home match day Saturday compared to another Saturday. So it is, you know, a significant increase in the number of people. And obviously that provides income for those businesses and jobs and all the rest of it. So it is a significant economic impact on the town if the club moved out.
And do you really think there is room? You know, have you looked in terms of that at Vicarage Road? Because I know one side has got all the houses and the other side, I say, is got... What is the development directly behind? What was the old allotments?
So that's turning into a multi-storey car park.
Okay, and right.
So that's what then frees up the car park for the hospital.
I got you.
Cool. Of course, you've got the flats on the back of one of the stands, which doesn't help. But, I mean, that's what we're looking at the moment. We're looking at kind of what are the options, what's feasible. Obviously, the four corners have been filled in, which has increased the capacity. And it's not a definite outcome at the moment. It's just exploring what are the possibilities to expand on the current site.
Adam, you did a piece this week, Watford's plan to redevelop Vicarage Road, accelerating after promotion. And it is sort of the thing I suspected was going to start revving up. But you put it down as a redevelopment of Vicarage Road. And you know, the mayor seems to be more happy about that. What else have you found out about this redevelopment or possible move?
It's quite interesting at the moment. And obviously people that live locally will have, you know, been reading the local news about Watford General for quite some time. But now that Watford are back in the Premier League and there seems to be a real push to get this new Watford General, which will move from, you know, the existing site onto the existing car park, which will then free up space behind the Graham Taylor stand, for that to be done, hopefully, by 2025. And sort of my understanding is that the push really is to get it done by that date, because it was a Conservative Party pledge at the election to get 40 hospitals done by 2030. I think they've sort of backtracked and it's going to be 6 for the time being. And one of those is Watford General. So they would like to have some sort of proof that they know what they're talking about or can be trusted, whatever way you're leaning is. So it's sort of linked in with political momentum in terms of the national side of things, but then also local momentum, because I don't think the Watford Council, as we've heard from Peter, would like to have the town's football club not playing within the town's boundary. So if Watford's aim is to, you know, redevelop Vicarage Road and to do those, you know, things that they probably always wanted to do, even if they are going to move to a new stadium, it just sort of gives them a little bit more incentive. The I don't know, sort of like a mouldy carrot has been dangled in front of Watford Council. You know, we're going to move away, by the way. We're going to move. Well, hang on a minute. We actually stay. So I think it's sort of just, you know, grease the wheels a little bit, or whatever the saying is, to make sure that Watford and their potential move into the space at Watford General, expanding that side of the ground, maybe expanding the Sir Elton John stand side of the ground as well, is helped by the council as much as possible, because they want the club to stay in the town, you know, for as long as possible. So it's an interesting sort of political debate that the promotion and the push to get it done by 2025 and things like that has just sort of focused everyone's minds, and you know, they've been having planning meetings and things like that just to make sure that, you know, that they can start to sort of move forward with that plan. Because I think if you look at it, and you know, they would have had sort of not that the hierarchy will have gone to all of these grounds all season, but in the Championship you will have had an opportunity to go to various different grounds that are those sort of generic bowls that often you get if you redevelop or you move to a new stadium. in the Championship, the likes of sort of, I don't know, Pride Park or Stoke or Middlesbrough and things like that. And when you get an insight into that, when you come back to Vicarage Road and you see the character and the fact that it's in the middle of the town and you can walk there from the pub and all that sort of stuff, you realise how lucky we are to still be in one of those sort of stadiums. And whilst it's not imperative that we have a, you know, 60, 70,000 seater stadium for when we are the Premier League champions in, you know, 5 years' time, you know, I think we can probably deal with our current capacity just slightly augmented. And also on the financial bottom line, to improve it in the short term, that can bring in a little bit more corporate hospitality dollar, which will help the bottom line and help the club, you know, incrementally grow in terms of their financial strength, because we've been so reliant on Premier League money for the last 5 years. And when you lose it, you then look else, you look elsewhere and see where the money's coming from. And there isn't, you know, much else. So it's all part of a grand plan. And I think it works at the moment. So I would think that that is the more likely plan than moving to Bushy in the next couple of years.
Adam mentioned it. Every time I set foot inside Vicarage Road, I love it. I absolutely love it. The fact that where it is, you know, nestled within the houses, just slightly sunk. You know, you wouldn't know it was there until you turn the corner. It's absolutely sensational, and it does look beautiful from the inside. You know, can't wait for people to be back in it. Of course, sitting in those shiny yellow and red seats. It's a lovely ground. It really, really is. It's got its issues. You know, the Vicarage Road concourse, we know, is a little bit tight, and so on and so forth. But you know, every ground has its issues, doesn't it? And I think it's much, much better to have something with character, something that we know and love and have called home for so long. So I think that sounds like a really, really exciting prospect, and I think one that will please virtually all, if not all, Watford supporters, unless, I suppose, you live in Bushy and you're a Watford fan and you fancy just having a 10-second walk to the ground. You know, there is, we've talked about the capacity, and it's very rare that you do sell out a Watford game. Even in the Premier League, you could probably find a ticket, but it was odds and sods, and there is a season ticket waiting list. We know that. I think interest will be peaked even further now as we come out of the pandemic and Watford in the Premier League. So I think it's the right time to look forward and try and extend that capacity, just because you can't have new fans if you can't fit them in. So I think it's good to aim high and go for it, and have the possibility of fitting more bodies in. So that for me sounds like the best option. So I'll be watching with interest, and the thought of expanding Vicarage Road is an exciting one.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
It is the end of the season. It's, of course, time to decide who is the best player of Watford's season in the Player of the Season. And yesterday, Mike, Jason, Colin and I gathered to see who we thought should be taking away that crown. So, Player of the Season. We're going to get to give one out this year. Mike... There was nobody who we could give that award to last year, is there?
No, absolutely not. I think it was disastrous from start to finish. In fact, Arlo was talking about it, because the first game of the season last year was his birthday, the 10th of August, and we were stuck in a massive queue at Calais trying to get back from France, and we were stuck sat in the same place for about 8 hours on a 9-year-old's birthday. I said, "Oh, don't worry, Arlo, we'll watch Watford, first game of the season, here we go." The queue at Calais was infinitely more pleasurable than the rest of the football season, wasn't it? So no one deserved a Player of the Season award. It was awful from start to finish.
So that's last year, but this year feels like, well, I don't want to give just one award out. I want to give them all an award. It's been such a fun season, especially the second half. They all deserve an award. Colin, what award could we possibly give? Who deserves an award? What could we give some awards out for?
There's a few I was thinking. I was thinking mostly, but I was to start at the back, I was thinking maybe Backman could get either the Bold Award or the Purcell Award for keeping his sheets so incredibly clean.
Yes.
Because he has been amazing.
But a Bold's still a thing.
Bold? Mike, what are you talking about? Bold non-bio. It's the best.
Yeah, still knocking around there, right?
Michael clearly doesn't clearly doesn't do the washing in his house.
No. The Daz Award, we could go even up more old school.
Jason, what about Sierra Alta? I was thinking best newcomer, because, you know, he's the best of all the new boys this year. What else could we give him an award for?
He could also go for the Seb Prodal Regeneration Award, I think.
Oh, yeah. The man bun. Yeah.
Man bun.
Absolutely,
of the year.
Yeah. And just his general good looks.
Adam Messina, I think there's two moments that Adam Messina, Mike, deserves an award for. Can you guess which two awards we should think about giving him?
I don't want to hear one.
Mike, go on then.
His telescopic leg against Norwich.
I think it's his toe. Just give his toe an award.
Yeah, all right. So there you go, Adam. Was his right or left foot? Anyway, is this the first time a toe has ever been awarded an award?
The longest toe in the squad award.
Yeah.
But he's got to get one for his free kick.
Yes, ooh, of course. The Break the Hoodoo, Break the Curse Award.
Okay.
Yeah, the Tozer Award.
Well, I was thinking Neil Redfern, but maybe I'm going back a bit too far, Colin. Cabaselli didn't play much, Jason, but he's got some notoriety in the last week. I was thinking maybe the Best Use of a Meme Award would work quite well.
I was going to say, yeah, when Cabaselli hears that he's won that award, I think the Local Man Is Pleased t-shirt will be back on. Yeah, that would be quite a prestigious award to win.
Jason, what can we give to William Troostekong?
For Troostekong, how about the Attention to Detail Award? Because we know he spends a lot of time doing his own analysis, looking at his own game. So I think you need to give him some credit for that.
Can I say what I hope we can give him the award next year? Is the Garmin or the TomTom award for most improved sense of direction? Because some of William's passing has left a little bit to be desired. And that little area of the back of the Sir Elton John stand where I've been kicking it out of frustration for the last year took a bit of a pounding on Saturday when there was a couple of misplaced passes. So hopefully this time next year, William Troostekong will be the proud recipient of the most improved direction, sense of direction award, the Garmin or TomTom award, I reckon.
I want to come in and just and give a more positive award to the great man, William Troostekong, and I'd like to give him the Talk Award for the phone calls he made that night after the Coventry game to galvanise the squad and bring them together and create a whole new atmosphere in that dressing room, which led to us winning, I don't know, 17 games out of 19 or whatever it was. And I think he does deserve a lot of credit because it's easy to duck away when things are tough. It's easy, especially if you're a new boy. It's his first season. He's come in. He's looking around after that game. People are, you know, digging each other out. He's got in his car. He's feeling miserable after a poor performance. And he's thinking, I could just go home and put Netflix on. But he thinks, no, actually, I am a bit older. I am a sort of senior player. I've had a lot of experience over the years. I'm going to phone around some of the other lads and see if we can have a clear the air chat. And I think if he hadn't done that, I mean, maybe someone else would have done it. But the fact that he did it is great credit to him, and it did really make a difference.
You know what probably happened though, Cole? He probably took a wrong turning somewhere, poor sense of direction, got lost. He thought, what? I've got an hour out of my way. What am I going to do with myself? I might as well phone the lads.
Well, there's always an award ceremonies. I mean, we've still got more to go. We've got more to give out, but I still think someone at the award ceremony has to go away with like just too many in their hand, so they can't quite handle, you know, can't keep them all in their hands. I'm thinking Foster needs a few here. I think one, his commitment to post-match analysis, even though we sort of mentioned that for William Troostekong, his attention to detail, but, you know, all these videos he's putting on YouTube and just for his camera work alone, how he holds it at such interesting angles, best cinematography. And maybe I think, you know, there's lots of things people do on YouTube just to get a little bit of attention, and I think Ben Foster doing videos while laying on his bed was probably trying too much. It's got to be a Kim Kardashian award for breaking the internet in a hotel room would be a pretty decent one.
I also think he should get the Best Friend Award because his performance on Hornet Hive after we were promoted, when he came on with Daniel Backman, you can see the real man in those moments, because he was absolutely delighted, obviously, that the club's been promoted, but he was also delighted that Backman had done so well, even though it meant that he hadn't played. There wasn't even a scintilla of disappointment about the way he presented himself in those moments. He was as happy as a 17-year-old kid, you know, winning his first cup competition or whatever. And the fact that he was able to say, you know, this is the guy, Backman is the man, Danny's the man, you know, we're all in it together. I really love that about Ben, and I think that he really stands stands up as somebody that, you know, you have to admire.
There's a lot of midfield we have to give awards to, Jason. Cleverley is an interesting one because, you know, he has that sort of character we need to give him award for. And, you know, Colin mentioned Troosticon for making the phone calls, and it took those senior players, all of them, to do stuff. But it's the fact that he sets a tone out there. Is there an award that we can give Cleverley for his leadership this year?
Yeah, I think so. And also, in a recent interview he talked about the debt that he felt he was sort of paying back to the club and the fans. So I think for that, we need to give him the Clubman of the Year award. It's always one that's sort of well coveted in Sunday League football, but I think in this case, it carries a lot more gravitas, and he'll be happy to win that award.
He's the bloke you'd most like to take home to meet your mum award, I reckon. Stand-up guy, solid, yeah. Dependable. I think we're sort of damning him with faint praise a little bit, hopefully taking in the spirit it's intended. But yeah, he's obviously such a solid guy, and just the way he did that interview was brilliant, wasn't it? Just at the time we needed it most, just to for us all to know that this promotion push was in safe hands, and there was people like Tom Cleverley prepared to work their nuts off to make sure it happened. And just I think it was such a well-timed interview that he said all the right stuff, but you felt he believed it. He really believed it, didn't he? You know, it was really quite emotional reading some of the stuff about how he felt that, you know, he owed it to the club because they stood by him when he's been injured, and he played a part in obviously that relegation side. So yeah, I think stand-up guy, and the bloke you'd most like to take home to meet your mum award.
On that, Mike, do you think that he loathes the cherries enough to meet your mum?
I think he does. Yeah, I think if he brings Dan Gosling with him, and he can confirm all mum's worst fears and hatreds, then that would be perfect. But yeah, you're absolutely right. There's like a code. How much do you hate Bournemouth at the front door? And
and if he doesn't come up with the right answer, God help him.
Yeah, exactly. So Dan Gosling, I want to give him, you know, a midfielder. Promotion season, came in late, made his impact. I want to give him the Ben Watson Memorial Award because he you know that sort of level of professionalism he brought to the squad, that certain level of know it determination, similar to Cleverley in many ways, but just did the business at the right time in there. What about Mike? What about Will Hughes? We need to give him an award. He's a serious contender, of course, for player of the season. What can we give Will?
Pretty simple, best in show, isn't he?
I mean, I know he's growing a beard, but
immaculately turned out, lovely luster on his coat at all times. Very obedient, does exactly what's asked of him. Sticks to his marker like glue. Keeps them on a tight leash. All that nonsense. I mean, look. All joking aside, is there a better player in that position in the Championship than William Hughes, Esquire? The answer is no. So, yeah, best in show, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Those sparkly eyes as well. Oh, I mean, just everything about the man is the best.
Jason, best cameo. There could be an argument for the Ngakoue and Andre Gray partnership for their coming on and scoring a goal within seconds against Birmingham. But is anyone else you think could be the best cameo?
Yeah, I think so. There's another player that joined us late in 2021. A player who signed, when he signed, we were told that he was rubbish by West Ham fan. But he's done a decent job for us, and that's Carlos Sanchez. You'd always get that little bit of excitement when his first touch goes out for a throw-on. But then after that, you get a solid, dependable performance. And we really did, in sort of recent games, we've seen him step up to the mark. I think it was a Reading game where he sort of stood firm in that holding position in midfield when we were struggling with injuries. And he definitely, I think, earned the best cameo award.
Hair and makeup, Akraf Lazar. That's about all he looked. His hair never looked out of place, did he? But unfortunately, his positional play was quite often out of place. So
I think we could probably give him an award for sort of his charitable work for that back pass against them up the road that led to the penalty.
He's out for that alone.
I'd like to take issue on that because the back pass itself was poor. There's no doubt about that. But did he really need to? He could have come out. I think it's a double error because he came out and just ran straight into him. I mean, he didn't even. I mean, it was a bizarre decision making by a goalkeeper who put under pressure by his own player, admittedly. But I don't think Batman covered himself in glory in that moment either. But yeah, it was a lousy back pass. Yeah.
Mike, Nathaniel Chalobah, I think Troy Deeney's giving him the Boys to Men award because of how much he's matured this year. Any other award that you think maybe Nathaniel could get to sort of top off this midfield chat?
To the end of the world. No. Can I go? It's a natural.
Clenched fist to the air.
You belong
down.
To me. I belong to you. That was Boys to Men, by the way. In case
yeah, for the slightly younger listeners, yeah.
Look, the great thing about Nate Chalobah is just his return to form. So what about the Back to the Future award? He's sort of gone back to his that form that we all hoped he could hit. He's gone back to being as influential as we hoped and expected, really, that he was going to be. And all of a sudden, he looks like a hot prospect for the future again, doesn't he? Because at one stage, it looked like we weren't going to be able to get a tune out of him. It just wasn't clicking. It wasn't happening. And kind of when we've needed him to, he's really stepped up, hasn't he? And so, yeah, I think he's, great Scott. Give him the Back to the Future award.
We're up front, though. Up front, you know, we got Saar, we got Ken, and we got Pedro. Colin, what can we give Pedro for an award?
Quickest into a scrap award? I mean, yeah, that boy loves a scrap, doesn't he? As soon as there's a push on anyone, he'll run 30 yards to have another push. So I really like that about him. And all the other players laugh when he does it, and they go, go on, kid, get in there, get stuck in. But beyond the fact that, obviously, he won't be able to do that in the Premier League, and I'm sure that he'll stop those kind of antics. But he normally waits till it's got going, and then he gets involved. So that might save him from the odd yellow or red.
I wonder how he would do in a scrap at Kudos or Destiny or whatever the place is called these days. Yeah, I think he might be a little bit too late just to not be hit straight in the face. But he tried his best.
Well, let's hope we never find out as well.
Yeah, hopefully, yes.
Yeah, I think also possibly, I mean, he's very good looking, according to my daughters. Not something that I know a great deal about. But they say, oh, George, Joao Pedro's a good-looking boy. So maybe pin-up of the year, possibly?
Surely Zinchenko's a shoe-in for pin-up of the year in the absence
of... Isn't he a housewife's favourite? Whereas I think Joao Pedro is a bit of a teeny bopper.
Yeah, I can say, Colin's girls are teenagers. There might be a slight difference in that.
Pin-up of the year, of course, is the John Award, because it's either John McClellan for my mum or John Eustace for me. So
the first non-John, unless Joao means John in Portuguese. I think I want to give him, just for his celebration after the goal against Derby County, the most likely to slide on his knees a wedding.
the most likely to do a Peter Kay style celebration. On that, on the montage that Watford so brilliantly put together, the We Are Back montage, and it's got all that brilliantly, by the way, it's got the HMS P the League ship that was doing the rounds early on in the season. It's got that snuck in the back of that. So if you haven't seen that, look in the back right-hand corner of that brilliant collage, and you'll see just the mast, if you like, of that ship in the corner. But it's got that celebration at Derby, and it looks like he's dislocating virtually every bone in his body. He's sort of stretched, his knees are bent backwards, he's arching backwards. It looks incredibly, incredibly painful. So let's hope he doesn't get in a fight in Destiny or Oceania or Kudos, whatever it is, and B, doesn't hurt himself during those quite extraordinary celebrations.
I think just because of the one moment where you got him good, Mike, you got him good. I think Ken Semmer, even though he's probably get the goat of the year, or the number
absolutely.
Of...
King Ken
can get. I think he's going to win the Gotcha Oscar, if anyone remembers Noel's house party. For falling for that one. If you didn't see, Mike was part of a prank to say that. What was the goal? What was the game against? He scored a goal, but then it was an own goal, or thought to be an own goal.
I think it was against Bristol City.
Oh yes.
And there was some concern. There was some vague confusion about whether the first goal. And we did a prank on him. And what I loved about that was just the way he took it. You know, his big smile, big laugh. Ken has been front and centre, hasn't he? He's been one of the shining lights all season. You know, at the second half of the season, his form tailed off a little bit, perhaps understandably so. It was a difficult season for a whole host of reasons. But he really was, you know, he's become a cult hero very quickly, hasn't he? And I think a lot of that is down to his disposition. He looks like he's enjoying playing football for Watford Football Club. And as supporters, to see that, you can hang your hat on that, can't you? And even when things weren't going well, Ken Semmer was one of the a few highlights, wasn't he? And I just love the fact that he's always smiling. He always looks happy. He looks like a man happy in his work, happy in a Watford shirt. And he made a massive, massive contribution this year. And yeah, it's his Ken's smiling eyes will be one of the abiding memories of this year for me.
Love a good Ken smile. Jason, Ismail Assar, he needs an award. He scored lots of goals. He's made us excited. I was thinking, thank God you stuck around, award, because things would have been a bit different. What else could we give him?
Yeah, well, we know all about his pace. So we've got the Autosport magazine 0 to 60 award for being the fastest player on earth. He's taken many victims with his pace, the latest being Millwall's Billy Mitchell. I was surprised when the ref gave the penalty on Saturday. He wasn't immediately followed by a however it goes. But yeah, Ismail Assar for the fastest player on earth, the Autosport magazine 0 to 60 award.
Excellent. Or the Roadrunner Award.
Colin, we missed out Kiko. Kiko needs an award. We missed him out of defence. He's been on our lips and been part of our praise the entire season. What could we give our Kiko? I mean, worst sock wearer, that's for sure.
Well, I know you've taken against his socks, John, but you're very strict about uniform. And
I have standards, Colin. I have standards.
You're being a primary school teacher. I don't know if your school has a uniform, but if the kids at your school have to wear a uniform, they'd better wear it right. Mooney's on the mark.
And they do.
So, yes, I didn't mind his. I don't know what the socks thing was about. I think it's to do with relieving pressure on his calves. He also wore quite a lot of tape down the backs of his legs. And it's not surprising because Kiko Firminia is a man who runs and runs and runs. And runs, and I would like to give him some form of sort of enduring hero award, or the endurance award, or the Iron Man award, just for the amount of running that player does for us. And I, for one, really, really like him. He seems, again, a bit like Ken. It seems like a lot of the players in the team, they like to play with a smile on their faces. They're enjoying their football. Obviously, they're winning loads of games, so they're bound to be enjoying it. But nevertheless, he seems to have that demeanour. He seems to be happy in a Watford shirt. There's never any noise around him, really. I mean, the media are trying to say, oh, will he stay, won't he stay? And there may be an opportunity for him to leave, but he's got a young family. He's very settled. He's going to be playing Premier League football. He's definitely number one in that position at the club, unless they go and buy somebody absolutely superb, which I think is they've got other priorities. So I can see him staying, and I just think that the work rate and the way that he's helped Saar. Saar was, you know, being very fulsome in praising Firminia this week, saying what they were different types of footballers, but they really had learned to play alongside each other, to link up well and to cause havoc down their right hand side. And we've seen that pretty much all season. And a lot of that is to do with Kiko. And so, yeah, I think the Enduring Hero Award or the Iron Man Award.
The Iron Man Award is right, because we've seen him, he's almost Rocky-esque. He was drinking, there's that picture on his Instagram of him drinking his coffee out in the snow with very little clothing on. So yeah, he's obviously tough on and off the pitch. So yeah, I reckon the Iron Man Award for Kiko is perfect.
Well, that certain chat there, lad, seems to think you're making him a serious contender. Not just this fun awards we've been talking about, but yeah, who are the serious contenders for Player of the Season? There are a lot to pick on. They've all done great. We're not going to knock anybody. But who are the serious contenders? Colin, we see the WhatsApp group. We know who you love quite a lot. Who is your serious, serious contender for it?
Do you mean Will-O-the-Wisp?
Again, one for the older audience.
One for the old people who've been listening for a while. I think I mentioned that about years ago by accident. Anyway, I would say William James Hughes Esquire is a very strong contender for Player of the Season. I think you could argue that he only really came into his own after Cisco changed the system. And instead of putting him in the more forward positions in that midfield three, actually asking him to play in the deeper position, which we had become accustomed to watching Chalabar play there and seeing everyone saying, well, Hughes is a number 10, he's a number 10, push him further up the pitch. And Cisco obviously saw something both in Chalabar, who didn't thrive in that position, I don't think, really, and in Hughes, who he felt could really play that anchor role. And as soon as he went in there, it looked like he'd been playing that position for 100 years. He looked born to play it. I'm reminded of Firminia at Liverpool, because people were confused. He was a number 9 on his back, like Ian Rush, and yet he wasn't scoring that many goals. He played in the central part of this man attacking, and no one really understood his role. And they said, and someone journalist went, I mean, what is your part in the system? And he said, I am the system. And I think that you can apply that to Will Hughes. I really think that when the system changed, he became the key player in the new system, and he was the one piece of the jigsaw that helped everyone else work almost to their highest potential. You know, we've seen Gosling and we have seen Sanchez come on, play in a more forward position, also drop into that anchor role. But we've seen Zinca, Nagel, Chalobah. We've seen players interchange in those two more forward midfield positions. But and they've been able to do that and do it successfully. And the same for, I guess you could argue, for Semeran and Saar, and also for the two fullbacks to get forward, to have that courage to get forward and overload opposition. And so much of that is down to the fact that we can rely and trust Hughes and the defensive unit in case of a quick breakaway. And I think that he inspires that kind of confidence in the players around him. I think that when he gets the ball, they don't think he's going to lose it. They take a step forward because they know he's going to keep it and maybe find a pass or find a little pocket of space. And on the other hand, he's always available. So when you are under pressure, you can make a half turn and there's Hughes saying, you can give it to me if you want. And you pass it to him and then the ball gets recycled. So I think he's been so pivotal in our success in the second half of the season since that Coventry game. I think that he has to be... and as Mike said earlier, I mean, if you can tell me who's a better player in that position in the Championship, I don't know who that would be. And I think that makes him a serious contender.
Can I add a little bit to that as well? And I think Colin's done a brilliant job in explaining just how vital he is on the pitch. But I think this season has been interesting in us getting to know a little bit more about Will Hughes as a character as well. And I think we probably assume that he probably was quite quiet and maybe a little bit retiring. Well, I did. I don't know why, just based on appearances. And obviously what we've seen this year from, you know, Ben Foster's videos, he's got a brilliant, wicked sense of humour. He's obviously a big part of the changing room and that dynamic. And just on, you know, I was lucky enough to be there on Saturday and just watching the vast swathes of interviews that were done afterwards, just watching how Will Hughes operates. He's an incredibly confident but nice bloke, and you know, he's witty, he's really, really charismatic, and he's a much, much bigger and more influential character, I think, than I possibly thought. And we needed characters like that this season. We've talked about William Troostekong stepping up and making those phone call and making that happen. That's a big characteristic that takes, you know, bollocks, quite frankly, to step up and do it. And I think Will Hughes has got the cojones as well, and I think that's something that we've probably learned this year. So everything that Colin says about how vital he is on the pitch, I think there's extra stuff behind the scenes that we possibly haven't been aware of so much until this season. So I think he's huge on the training ground and in the dressing room as well. And I think as we move towards the Premier League, we're going to need characters like that. And he's a big one. So I think that feeds into it as well. He really is a fully rounded character and member of the team and squad.
Well, I don't know, after the two of you going at him like that, there's no other choice for player of the season. But let's see if there are the other serious contenders. Jason, Sierralta. Do we think Sierralta has got it? Only sort of really played half the season, but did he have a big enough impact, do you think, to give him and, you know, to make him part of that conversation for player of the season?
Oh, I definitely think so. I think with Francisco, he's had a great half of the season which he's played, and he's a star in the making as well. We jokingly given him that best newcomer award, and it's easy to forget that he is actually still quite young. He's only 23. You look at him on the pitch, the way he plays, look at him in general, you think he's much older and much more mature as a footballer. And he's probably played more football this season than he has in his whole career so far. And you wouldn't think that from the way he plays. As a defender, he's strong in the air, good header of the ball. But off the ball, he's very impressive as well. I think he reads the game really well. He knows when to attack. His positional sense is pretty good. It's rare that he gets caught out. I think it only happens once or twice throughout the season. And I love what he does when he hasn't got the ball and he's up against an attacker. That thing he does where the old-fashioned shoulder, I don't know if shoulder charge is the right word, or shoulder barge, but when he goes shoulder to shoulder with an attacker, he has this incredible ability to knock them off balance, knock them off their feet without giving a foul or a penalty away. There's been a few sort of hairy moments where you think, oh, crikey, we're in trouble here. But actually, no. he's done it to perfection. And the Championship strike force in general have struggled up against him. He's not given them an inch. And for a player to come into a side that was, whilst we weren't performing brilliantly, we were defending pretty well. So for him to come in to that team, keep out a couple of experienced Premier League players in Cabaselli and Craig Cathcart and hold his place in the team for a young lad that's not played that much football, very, very impressive.
But Mike, you know, we've heard Sierra, very good. Will Hughes, very, very good. We've already said how great Kiko was this year. The only player that I think is, well, would you put him above Ismail Assar?
Yeah, I think I would. And the reason being, Will Hughes didn't play the entire season through no fault of his own at all. Sierra wasn't brought in until later in the season as well. Someone who has played, he's going to miss the last two games, unfortunately, and obviously he missed a game through suspension. But if you're going to get sent off against anyone, you can be permitted for getting a red card against Luton. Kiko has played an integral part from game one all the way through the season in this promotion campaign. And as we will all remember, the start of the season up until Christmas was pretty tough going. And I kept thinking, how is this talented side making this look so difficult? They're coming up against inferior opposition, with all due respect. The players they were playing against were not as good as them. And they were like, it was like, watch, they were running through treacle. They were making it look difficult, apart from one man. And that was Kiko Femenia. In every game he played, he looked every inch a Premier League footballer. He looked like he had extra time. His touch was superior. His passing was superior. He was able to get things going down the right-hand side when it looked like we could have played until 2025 and never scored a goal. And defensively, he's played his part in an absolutely extraordinary record that Watford are having so far. If they can round off this season not conceding too many goals, it really will almost be historic, I think. I think there's an opportunity for them to have conceded the fewest goals in a Championship season for any side. I think that's still there. So as a defender, you have to give him credit for that. His attacking prowess has been highlighted throughout the season. His link-ups with Ismail Assar have been absolutely breathtaking at times. And obviously, Ismail Assar is a huge, huge contender, hugely important. But the question we asked time and time again, how do we get Ismail Assar into the game? And usually it's Kiko Femenia. And that has been a constant throughout. So I think he's been a shining beacon of quality right through the dirge, all the way through to getting us promoted. And so I just think the fact that he has performed at 7 or 8 out of 10 throughout the season, week in, week out, means that he, for me, I think just edges it as player of the season. I think he's been stupendous through thick and thin.
But Ismail Assar, Jason, can you make a case for Ismail Assar to be player of the season?
You've got to include him in the mix, haven't you? I think because what he's done for us, the games he's won for us, we've won a lot of games by the odd goal, and it's been his productivity, his runs, even the where he's been the player that's been fouled in the box for the penalties. There's been a few of those, I think, as well, because he's just an out-and-out danger. He's a threat. When we've attacked at times in games, we have very much focused it down the right-hand side, and it's not like the opposition don't know it's coming. They know exactly where the threat is, and they still can't cope with it. They've tried to put bodies out there. And we've talked about Kiko and how important he's been in that, I think, as well. The attacking midfield players are just as important. They run those channels down the right-hand side to support. But, yeah, Saar, with his pace, with his ability, maybe earlier in the season, we weren't quite getting the end product, but that has quickly come along. And we know how much we paid for him. Has it been worth every penny? I think we probably still need to see more, but he can't be far off. There'll be clubs looking again this summer because of the performance he's put in this season.
He's been absolutely extraordinary. I mean, the only reason I think Kiko beats him to player of the season is because earlier on, and again, I don't think this is any fault of his own. I don't think we were playing to his strengths at all, but he just looked like it was a bit of a struggle early on for him. He didn't look like he was enjoying his football, and he wasn't having the impact that he had in the second half of the season. But the impact he did have in the second half of the season I mean, it was nothing short of extraordinary. I mean, just seeing the way he developed into this player who just, he knew he had the opposition on toast. He knew that he could beat whoever he is up against for pace. You know, find me someone that can beat a defender that can beat him for pace and I'd be very, very surprised. And it sort of all clicked into place in the second half of the season, and we got the Ismaïla Sarr that we hoped we were going to see. And I don't want to be too critical of him because I don't, you know, the whole team were out of sorts, weren't they, up until Christmas, up until the Bristol City game. But after that, when we clicked as an attacking threat, so much of it was as a result of him. You know, later on in the season, he's getting double teamed. That frees up space elsewhere for other people to make a difference. A remarkable, remarkable talent and a huge, huge part of this promotion season. And, you know, they look at the key games. The Reading game, which was a must win, two wonderful goals. He just took the game away from them in an instant. The game against Millwall, a game of very, very low on quality, very few chances. The defender just couldn't deal with him, knew he had to do something, and the fouling him was his best bet, and that's where we got our goal from. And as Jason said, a lot of these games have been very close, despite us finding our attacking mojo. There still have been, you know, 1-0s, 2-1s knocking around, and all too often, and this isn't a criticism, the difference is one bit of quality. And very frequently, that bit of quality has come from Ismaïla Sarr. He was increasingly direct, increasingly dynamic, and increasingly influential. And I, for one, am drinking in every minute that we have Ismaïla Sarr as a Watford player. He is an extraordinary talent. And I think if he carries on at this trajectory, you know, his confidence will continue to grow. And a confident Ismaïla Sarr is a terrifying Ismaïla Sarr for anyone playing Watford. And I include anyone in the Premier League in that. We only need to look at the Liverpool game when we played them at the peak of their powers and he absolutely dismantled them. So, wonderful player. I don't think we saw enough of it. We didn't see from start to finish like we did for Kiko. Still banging the drum for you there, Kiko.
I think also what's really impressive about him is that he's played under the pressure of being seen as our best player. Mm. And for a young man to play under that kind of pressure, to come out onto the pitch knowing that everyone in the opposition, in the media, in the ground, they know that he's arguably the most gifted player on the pitch, but he's only 20, 21, and he has still been able to perform and affect results even under that kind of pressure. And that speaks about mental strength, which is something he's going to need if he's going to have the career that we think he could have. And he's showing that now, and we are very, very lucky to have him, I think.
So, come on, you've got to make your choices, gentlemen. You've got to make your choices. Who is your player of the season? Michael?
Kiko, definitely.
Colin?
Hughes.
Jason?
I voted officially for Mr. Will Hughes.
Well, you lot know nothing about football. Why are you not voting for Mark Navarro? I've got no idea.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
Adam, who's your player of the season?
It's a tough one. I think I'm going to go for Kiko Sierra-Alsar. I haven't got... it's difficult. I've missed out Will Hughes within that name as well. Will Kiko Sierra-Alsar. I think it's... And Tom Cleverley as well. So I think what this season is... I don't think there's been an individual who has stood head and shoulders above the rest consistently all the way through. But I think there have been sort of moments within the season where performances have shone from individuals at key times. But I think maybe having said that, I would probably go for Francisco Sierra-Alsar because I think he has been as consistent as anyone else and has made a huge amount of difference. So I'm going to go for Big Fran.
Oh, the hipster's choice, I think. The hipster's choice. Well done, Adam. Now, here's a quick quiz question for you both. Use your history of Watford. Now, the first time Watford got relegated from the top division, who was the player of the season the following year? I bring this up because my friend Ollie Wicken, writer and creator of Hornet Heaven and part of the YBR and the Treasury team, pointed this out to me. So I'm not that clever, but he points out to me. Who was the first name, do you think, that season, Mike? 88-89 came to mind.
What, 88, when we came down from Division 1?
Yeah, the first season. Who do you reckon was?
I assume it's Tony Coton.
Adam, who was your first thought for you?
the first person I thought of was Dave Bamber.
But the weird thing about this, the player who won it actually only played 25 games and scored 5 goals. They played like 4 at the beginning of the season, got injured. A few in September, got injured. Played most of November, a bit of December, then got injured. Played between February and April, where they scored 5 goals, where I'm sure that's where the vote happened. And then they didn't play the last 6 games of the season. Any ideas now, Mike?
What year are we talking?
88, 89. My first guess was John McLennan, but it wasn't.
Is it your favourite player, John?
It is, isn't it?
It is!
It's your favourite player!
Glyn Hodges!
Wow. Oh, Glyn Hodges.
So that was a little... That, he got me on that one, so I thought I'd share that with everybody. Yeah, he's after... Literally, if you look at the chart that's on Watford Archive, you think, he hardly ever played a game. But he had the right games at the right time, and he was just great generally. John McLennan and Tony Kent were my first guesses. We've got one more game to go, Adam. Home to Swansea. I'd like a draw, just so we can at least equal
What are you talking about, a draw, man?
At least. Just because, you know, that would get us to 89 points and that would equal us to what we achieved when we went up in 2015. But, of course, we want to win. Are we going to see the same? Do you think we might, because they've had almost a week off, or by that point 2 weeks off, Ismail Assar and João Pedro to come back into that team to be a bit more normal?
Yeah, I think so. I think there'll probably be a decision to be made, especially with the sort of the niggles, that they might actually just sort of go, you know what, this isn't important at all for Watford. And if you have got a niggle, just have a breather. I think a lot of them will want to finish the season, especially play on that Vicarage Road pitch for one more time. And if Sarr, João Pedro, Nathaniel Chalabar can maybe come in and play. It doesn't look like Tom Cleverley's going to play. I wouldn't have thought. It didn't look like a serious injury. And he'd sort of been struggling with a little bit of an injury at the end of the Millwall game. And obviously he's been out with that knee injury. So I would have thought, I think probably the sensible thing is to just give other people a go. And I know you want to finish and you want to finish with a win and a flourish and all that sort of stuff. But there's no point someone picking up an injury that is going to then rule them out and delay them in terms of their pre-season and that sort of stuff. I'd just wrap them in cotton wool and give someone else a go. That would be my choice. But unfortunately, I haven't actually been officially appointed as the super sporting director as yet. I mean, that's to come. I've got an article coming up on The Athletic all about I guess what do you guys think? There's no point, like, if Sarr's got a little bit of a knee problem or whatever, you know, whatever, just there's no point.
There isn't. I'd like to finish with a flourish. I'd like to get the home wins up. That astonishing points tally. I'd like to rack that up so it's one that we can look back in years to come. And I do think it'd be nice to end with a clean sheet as well. If we do keep a clean sheet, we will have equaled the record for fewest goals conceded in a championship season. And I think they do deserve to go out on a high with the full stop being a zero in the goal against column. But, you know, look, it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Next season is what happens now, is the most important thing now. The focus is very much on that for us as supporters, or it should be. I think it's one where we can sit back, relax, enjoy whatever happens. It's one more game until that very, very long break now, it'll feel like, won't it? With all the transfer rumours that start swirling around, contract negotiations, rumours about this, rumours about that. It will feel like a long time. So let's enjoy that final 90-odd minutes that we get to watch of this season. It has been a cracker in the end, and it'd be good to round it off with a flourish. You know, Swansea will be preparing for the playoffs. They may well have a rough idea of who they're playing. Very much like if Watford had had a bit of luck today, I think we could have beaten Brentford. I think Watford will fancy their chances against Swansea, who won't be going all guns blazing. They'll be worried about injuries much more than we are, for example. But yeah, I think Adam's absolutely right. If there's any doubt whatsoever about anyone, then yeah, just get them wrapped up in cotton wool, ready to come back. Let them have their break. They've earned it. come back fit as a fiddle, ready for pre-season, because we're going to need everybody fit, focused and ready to go in the Premier League. I'd love to end this season on a high, but that we've had the high, we've done it, the job of work is done, we don't need to worry too much. But yeah, just finishing off with another clean sheet and another cheeky little 1-0 would be absolutely perfect for me.
Thank you very much for your time, Adam.
Absolute pleasure, gents. Have a good week.
And thank you, Michael.
Cheers, fellas. Well done, Watford. Well done, everybody. Carry on enjoying it. We've lost today, but we lost the battle, but we won the war.
Yeah.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.